Hello, I am Joe Bartlett, and this is the Blue Creek Outdoors Bible Study. Hey there, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Blue Creek Outdoors Bible Study. Last week, we started the book of Job. We read over half of it, and we went through it. If you haven't listened to that yet, definitely go back and check that out, because today we're going to start in chapter 29 of the book of Job and finish it. It's got 42 chapters, so we've got 13 chapters to go through today before next week we get back into Genesis to finish that up as well. Like I said, remember, we're reading the Bible chronologically, so we are, you know, interrupting books to read other books in the middle of some books, and it's a little bit iffy sometimes when you're thinking about what's where and things like that. But for right now, we're going to start with chapter 29 through 31. We're going to read those chapters and then have a little bit of a recap. But here we are today, finishing the book of Job. So Job has gone back and forth with his friends. They are being terrible friends, obviously. Quick recap, telling him that everything he's enduring is due to his sin. And he has gone on some long, dramatic speeches telling them why they're wrong and how terrible of friends they are, which we really got into it in the last episode. So, but we are in starting in chapter 29, Job is speaking to his friends at the moment. So chapter 29, Job continued his discourse. For how I long for the months gone by, for the days when God watched over me, when his lamp shone upon my head and by his light I walked through darkness. Oh, for the days when I was in my prime, when God's intimate friendship blessed my house, when the Almighty was still with me and my children were around me, when my path was drenched with cream and the rock poured out for me streams of olive oil. When I went to the gate of the city and took my seat in the public square, the young men saw me and stepped aside, and the old men rose to their feet. The chief men refrained from speaking and covered their mouths with their hands. The voices of the nobles were hushed, and their tongues stuck to the roof of their mouths. Whoever heard me spoke well of me, and those who saw me commended me. Because I rescued the poor who cried for help, and the fatherless who had none to assist him. The man who was dying blessed me. I made the widow's heart sing. I put on righteousness as my clothing. Justice was my robe and my turban. I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame. I was a father to the needy. I took up the case of the stranger. I broke the fangs of the wicked and snatched the victims from their teeth. I thought, I will die in my own house. My days are as numerous as the grains of sand. My roots will reach to the water, and the dew will lie all night on my branches. My glory will remain fresh in me, the bow ever new in my hand. Men listened to me expectantly, waiting in silence for my counsel. After I had spoken, they spoke no more. My words fell gently on their ears. They waited for me as for showers, and drank in my words as the spring rain. When I smiled at them, they scarcely believed it. The light of my face was precious to them. I chose the way for them, and sat as their chief. I dwelt as a king among his troops. I was like one who comforts mourners. Chapter 30. But now they mock me, men younger than I, whose fathers I would have disdained to put with my sheepdogs. Of what use was the strength of their hands to me, since their vigor had gone from them? Haggard from want and hunger, they roamed the parched land, in desolate wastelands at night. In the brush they gathered salt herbs, and their food was the root of the broom tree. They were banished from their fellow men, shouted at as if they were thieves. They were forced to live in the dry stream beds. Among the rocks and in the holes of the ground, they brayed among the bushes and huddled in the undergrowth. A base and nameless brood, they were driven out of the land. And now their sons mock me in song. I have become a byword among them. They detest me and keep their distance. They do not hesitate to spit in my face. Now that God has unstrung my bow and afflicted me, they throw off restraint in my presence. On my right, the tribe attacks. They lay snares for my feet. They build their siege ramps against me. They break up my road. They succeed in destroying me without anyone's helping them. They advance as through a gaping breach. Amid the ruins, they come rolling in. Terrors overwhelm me. My dignity is driven away as by the wind. My safety vanishes like a cloud. And now my life ebbs away. Days of suffering grip me. Night pierces my bones. My gnawing pains never rest. In his great power, God becomes like clothing to me. He binds me like the neck of my garment. He throws me into the mud, and I am reduced to dust and ashes. I cry out to you, O God, but you do not answer. I stand up, but you merely look at me. You turn on me ruthlessly. With the might of your hand, you attack me. You snatch me up and drive me before the wind. You toss me about in the storm. I know you will bring me down to death, to the place appointed for all the living. Surely no one lays a hand on a broken man when he cries for help in his distress. Have I not wept for those in trouble? Has not my soul grieved for the poor? Yet when I hoped for good, evil came. When I looked for light, then came darkness. The churning inside me never stops. Days of suffering confront me. I go about blackened, but not by the sun. I stand up in the assembly and cry for help. I have become a brother of jackals, a companion of owls. My skin grows black and peels. My body burns with fever. My harp is tuned to mourning, and my flute to the sound of wailing. Chapter 31. I made a covenant with my eyes not to look lustfully at a girl. For what is man's lot from God above, his heritage from the Almighty on high? Is it not ruin for the wicked, disaster for those who do wrong? Does he not see my ways and count my every step? If I have walked in falsehood or my foot has hurried after deceit, let God weigh me in honest scales, and he will know that I am blameless. If my steps have turned from the path, if my heart has been led by my eyes, or if my hands have been defiled, then may others eat what I have sown, and may my crops be uprooted. If my heart has been enticed by a woman, or if I have lurked at my neighbor's door, then may my wife grind another man's grain, and may other men sleep with her, for that would have been shameful, a sin to be judged. It is a fire that burns to destruction. It would have uprooted my harvest. If I denied justice to my men servants and maidservants when they have had grievance against me, what will I do when God confronts me? What will I answer when called to account? Did not he who made me in the womb make them? Did not the same one form us both within our mothers? If I have denied the desires of the poor, or let the eyes of the widow grow weary, if I have kept my bread to myself, not sharing it with the fatherless, but from my youth I reared him as would a father, and from my birth I guided the widow. If I have seen anyone perishing for lack of clothing, or a needy man without a garment, and his heart did not bless me for warming him with the fleece from my lap, if I have raised my hand against the fatherless, knowing that I had influence in court, then let my arm fall from the shoulder. Let it be broken off at the joint. For I dreaded destruction from God, and for fear of his splendor I could not do such things. If I have put my trust in gold, or said to pure gold, you are my security. If I have rejoiced over my great wealth, the fortune my hands had gained. If I had regarded the sun in its radiance, or the moon moving in splendor, so that my heart was secretly enticed, and my hand offered them a kiss of homage. Then these would also be sins to be judged, for I would have been unfaithful to God on high. If I have rejoiced at my enemy's misfortune, or gloated over the trouble that came to him, if I have not allowed my mouth to sin by invoking a curse against his life, if the men of my household have never said, who has not had his fill of Job's meat, but no stranger had to spend the night in the street, for my door was always open to the traveler. If I have concealed my sin as men do by hiding my guilt in my heart, because I so feared the crowd and so dreaded the contempt of the clans that I kept silent and would not go outside, oh, that I had someone to hear me. I sigh now my defense. Let the Almighty answer me. Let my accuser put his indictment in writing. Surely I would wear it on my shoulder. I would put it on like a crown. I would give him an account of my every step. Like a prince, I would approach him. If my land cries out against me and all its furrows are wet with tears, if I have devoured its yield without payment or broken the spirit of its tenants, then let briars come up instead of wheat and weeds instead of barley. The words of Job are ended. So we have a little bit of an interesting chunk of passage there. It kind of opens up. Job reflects on a time when God was near and with him, and we're going to kind of come back to that to end this little segment as well. But I think it again expresses how close God was to Job and how close Job was to God, and how that relationship was very much a two-way communication. So a little bit one of those relationships that I kind of look at and I'm like, that's kind of how I wish I was with God. And that's what I strive to be for. So, but he also starts to take a little bit of an interesting turn. He starts to lament and talk about times when people listened to him. When old man got up, when he came in and young men moved out of the way. And when he spoke, people listened and respected him. And he refutes the claims that his friends made that he ignores those in need and takes advantage of them. He refutes that by saying like, no, I gave money to the poor. I helped out, young people without fathers. I helped out the widows. And then he starts to, in my opinion, take a negative turn, because Job was righteous. It does tell us that he was righteous, but pride and entitlement really start to creep out of his speech. He was very proud of who he was, the way he was, and because of that, he kind of got used to things being a certain way, and they're not that way anymore. So it has exposed a little bit of entitlement. But it also ends, it kind of takes another turn there. Chapter 22, we actually have a new character coming to this story that we haven't heard from yet. So the story starts kind of on the descent to the end of the book of Job. Now we've got, what should it be? 10 chapters left, I think. So nothing too crazy, but it kind of starts to slope down towards the end of the book and has a little bit of a spin. But I just did really quickly wanted to, chapter 29, in the very beginning of it, when he said, he's talking about when God was nearby in the past, he said, "When his lamp shone upon my head, and by his light I walked through darkness. For the days when I was in my prime, when God's intimate friendship blessed my house, when the Almighty was with me and my children were around me, my path was drenched with cream, and the rock poured out from me streams of olive oil." So, but he leads that segment by saying, "How I long for the days gone by, for the days when God watched over me, when his lamp shone upon my head, and by his light I walked through darkness." Something to remember. One thing I strikes me a little bit funny about this that I haven't thought of before until I just read it again right there. It says, "By his light I walked through darkness." And I'm not saying Job hadn't ever gone through hard times in his life before, because he obviously probably had. But not darkness like this. So, you know, he says, "By his light I walked through darkness," but, you know, maybe there wasn't a whole lot of darkness before this time. And now Job's starting to feel pretty sorry for himself that he, in my opinion, he kind of has to prove his own words here. It's time to walk through darkness, Job, just like you said, with his light. And he's kind of dropping the ball there. But we have somebody else to introduce, and we are going to carry on to chapter 32. Chapter 32. So these three men stopped answering Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. But Elihu, son of Barakel, the Buzite of the family of Ram, became very angry with Job for justifying himself rather than God. He was also angry with the three friends because they had found no way to refute Job and had yet condemned him. Now Elihu had waited before speaking to Job because they were older than he. But when he saw that the three men had nothing more to say, his anger was aroused. So Elihu, son of Barakah, the Buzite, said, "I am young in years, and you are old, and that is why I was fearful, not daring to tell you what I know. I thought age should speak, advanced years should teach wisdom. But it is the spirit in a man, the breath of the Almighty, that gives him understanding. It is not only the old who are wise, not only the aged who understand what is right. Therefore I say, listen to me, I too will tell you what I know. I waited while you spoke. I listened to your reasoning while you were searching for the words. I gave you my full attention. But not one of you has proved Job wrong. None of you has answered his arguments. Do not say, 'We have found wisdom,' and let God refute him, not man. But Job has not marshaled his words against me, and I will not answer him with your arguments. They are dismayed and have no more to say. Words have failed them. Must I wait now that they are silent, now that they stand there with no reply? I too will have my say. I too will tell you what I know. For I am full of words, and the spirit within me compels me. Inside I am like a bottled up wine, like new wineskins ready to burst. I must speak and find relief. I must open my lips and reply. I will show partiality to no one, nor will I flatter like any man. For if I were skilled in flattery, my maker would soon take me away." Chapter 33. "But now, Job, listen to my words. Pay attention to everything I say. I am about to open my mouth. My words are on the tip of my tongue. My words come from an upright heart. My lips sincerely speak what I know. The Spirit of God has made me. The breath of the Almighty gives me life. Answer me then, if you can. Prepare yourself and confront me. I am just like you before God. I too have been taken from clay. No fear of me should alarm you, nor should my hand be heavy upon you. But you have said in my hearing, 'I heard the very words, I am pure and without sin, I am clean and free from guilt,' yet God has found fault with me. He considers me his enemy, he fastens my feet in shackles, he keeps close watch on all my paths. But I tell you, in this you are not right, for God is greater than man. Why do you complain to him that he answers none of man's words? For does God speak now one way, now another? Though man may not perceive it in a dream, in a vision of the night, when deep sleep falls on men as they slumber in their beds, he may speak in their ears and terrify them with warnings, to turn man from wrongdoing and keep him from pride, to preserve his soul from the pit, his life from perishing by the sword. Or a man may be chastened on a bed of pain with constant distress in his bones, so that his very being finds food repulsive, and his soul loathes the choicest meal. His flesh wastes away to nothing, and his bones once hidden now stick out. His soul draws near to the pit, and his life to the messengers of death. Yet if there is an angel on his side as a mediator, one out of a thousand, to tell a man what is right for him, to be gracious to him and say, spare him from going down to the pit, I have found a ransom for him. Then his flesh is renewed like a child's. It is restored as in the days of his youth. He prays to God and finds favor with him. He sees God's face and shouts for joy. He is restored by God to his righteous state. Then he comes to men and says, I sinned and perverted what was right, but I did not get what I deserved. He redeemed my soul from going down to the pit, and I will live to enjoy the light. God does all these things to a man twice, even three times, to turn back his soul from the pit, that the light of life may shine on him. Pay attention, Job, and listen to me. Be silent, and I will speak. If you have anything to say, answer me. Speak up, for I want you to be cleared. But if not, then listen to me. Be silent, and I will teach you wisdom. Chapter 34. Then Elihu said, hear my words, you wise men. Listen to me, you men of learning. For the ear tests words as the tongue tastes food. Let us discern for ourselves what is right. Let us learn together what is good. Job says, I am innocent. Although I am right, I am considered a liar. Job says, I am innocent, but God denies me justice. Although I am right, I am considered a liar. Although I am guiltless, an arrow inflicts an incurable wound. What man is like Job who drinks scorn like water? He keeps company with evildoers. He associates with wicked men. For he says, it profits a man nothing when he tries to please God. So listen to me, you men of understanding. Far be it from God to do evil, from the Almighty to do wrong. He repays a man for what he has done. He brings upon him what his conduct deserves. It is unthinkable that God would do wrong, that the Almighty would pervert justice. Who appointed him over the earth? Who put him in charge of the whole world? If it were his intention, and he withdrew his spirit and breath, all mankind would perish together, and a man would return to the dust. If you have understanding, hear this. Listen to what I say. Can he who hates justice govern? Will you condemn the just and mighty one? Is he not the one who says to kings, you are worthless, and to nobles, you are wicked? Who shows no partiality to princes and does not favor the rich over the poor, for they are all the work of his hands. They die in an instant in the middle of the night. The people are shaken and they pass away. The mighty are removed without human hand. His eyes are on the ways of men and he sees their every step. There is no dark place, no deep shadow where evildoers can hide. God has no need to examine men further, that they should come before him for judgment. Without inquiry, he shatters the mighty and sets up others in their place. Because he takes note of their deeds, he overthrows them in the night, and they are crushed. He punishes them for their wickedness, for where everyone can see them, because they turned from following him and had no regard for any of his ways. They caused the cry of the poor to come before him, so that he heard the cry of the needy. But if he remains silent, who can condemn him? If he hides his face, who can see him? Yet he is over man and nation alike to keep a godless man from ruling, from laying snares for the people. Suppose a man says to God, I am guilty, but will offend no more. Teach me what I cannot see. If I have done wrong, I will not do so again. Should God then reward you on your terms when you refuse to repent? You must decide, not I. So tell me what you know. Men of understanding declare, wise men who hear say to me, Job speaks without knowledge, his words lack insight. Oh, that Job might be tested to the utmost for answering like a wicked man. To his sin he adds rebellion. Scornfully he claps his hands among us and multiplies his words against God. So in this section we meet Elihu, who apparently was in the vicinity of the conversation, or, you know, maybe worked for one of Job's friends or something, or just was a younger man who was sitting around them, listening to them speak. And, got sick of them all talking and none of them having a great argument for Job and being mad at Job for a couple of different things that we'll talk about. But here's honestly the one thing I took away immediately from Elihu. It sounds like a very young, hot-headed, know-it-all, arrogant young man, which sounds disturbingly familiar. And I'm sure I'm not the only one out there that sounds familiar to. So, but the first thing that kind of bugged me about him was he just he stood up and said he was going to say a lot. I mean, heck, good gracious. There's literally all of chapter two is basically him saying he was going to say something. Like, I mean, chapter two says, we'll start in the verse 10. Therefore, I say, listen to me. I too will tell you what I know. I waited while you spoke. I listened to your reasoning while you were searching for words. I gave you my full attention, but not one of you has proved Job wrong. And then a few lines down, we have, I too will have my say. I too will tell you what I know, for I am full of words. You definitely are full of words. I must speak and find relief. I mean, literally spent an entire chapter saying, by golly, listen to me. I'm about to talk. And it's like, shut up, dude. Talk. Good gracious. And then the beginning of chapter three, he still just is like saying that he's going to say something, but doesn't say anything. But then around like verse five, he starts to ask Job a question. But the interesting thing about it is, he says that Job said that he was without transgression, which never once was said by Job. Job said he was righteous and blameless. But again, we've already discussed that righteousness and blamelessness comes from knowing God and accepting God's forgiveness. And also Job says that Job explained a few times that he gave offerings. No one gives offerings that doesn't think that they've committed a transgression. That's not how that worked. The offerings were to pay for your transgressions. So obviously Job never thought he was sinless. He said he was righteous and blameless because he knew that those sins were forgiven and the debt was taken over, but he never once said he was sinless or without transgression. Now, the only thing I did like about what Elihu says comes in verse 21, talking about God. His eyes are on the ways of men. He sees their every step. There is no dark place, no deep shadow where evildoers can hide. God has no need to examine men further that they should come before him for judgment. And he obviously is very reverent of God, which is the one thing I do like about him. He was bold enough in his faith to speak up, however misguided. But, you know, obviously this group of men believed that your works were rewarded with what you deserved. Which we know to be false. But that being said, he did understand that God knows everything about everyone and there is no way to run or hide. And it just does speak to me that this group of friends or group of men that Job knew were very devout and which in this instance further harms Job's situation, because you had this group of friends that was such a devout support system who are now blaming you for the issues that you're having. But just those three verses, that even still holds true today. And those just stuck out to me. And I find it a little bit profound. His eyes are on the ways of men. He sees their every step. There is no dark place, no deep shadow where evildoers can hide. God has no need to examine men further that they should come before him for judgment. But so we're going to move on to chapter 35. Elihu is still talking. Chapter 35. Then Elihu said, "Do you think this is just? You say, I will be cleared by God, yet you ask him, what profit is it to me? What do I gain by not sinning? I would like to reply to you and to your friends with you. Look up at the heavens and see. Gaze at the clouds so high above you. If you sin, how does that affect him? If your sins are many, what does that do to him? If you are righteous, what do you give to him? Or what does he receive from your hand? Your wickedness only affects only a man like yourself, and your righteousness only the sons of men. Men cry out under a load of oppression. They plead for relief from the arm of the powerful. But no one says, where is God my maker, who gives songs in the night, who teaches more to us than the beasts of the earth, and makes us wiser than the birds of the air? He does not answer when men cry out because of the arrogance of the wicked. Indeed, God does not listen to their empty plea. The Almighty pays no attention to it. How much less then will he listen when you say that you do not see him, that your case is before him, and you must wait for him? And further, that his anger never punishes, and he does not take the least notice of wickedness. So Job opens his mouth with empty talk, without knowledge, and without knowledge he multiplies words. Chapter 36. Elihu continued, bear with me a little longer while I show you, and I will show you, that there is more to be said in God's behalf. I get my knowledge from afar. I will ascribe justice to my Maker. Be assured that my words are not false. One perfect in knowledge is with you. God is mighty, but does not despise men. He is mighty and firm in his purpose. He does not keep the wicked alive, but gives the afflicted their rights. He does not take his eyes off the righteous. He enthrones them with kings and exalts them forever. But if men are bound in chains, held fast by cords of affliction, he tells them what they have done, and they have sinned, that they have sinned arrogantly. He makes them listen to correction and commands them to repent of their evil. If they obey and serve him, they will spend the rest of their days in prosperity and their years in contentment. But if they do not listen, they will perish by the sword and die without knowledge. The godless in heart harbor resentment. Even when he fetters them, they do not cry for help. They die in their youth among male prostitutes of the shrines. But those who suffer, he delivers in their suffering. He speaks to them in their affliction. He is wooing you from the jaws of distress to a spacious place free from restriction, to the comfort of your table laden with choice food. But now you are laden with the judgment due the wicked. Judgment and justice have taken hold of you. Be careful that no one entices you by riches. Do not let a large bribe turn you aside. Would your wealth, or even all your mighty efforts, sustain you so you would not be in distress? Do not long for the night to drag people away from their homes. Beware of turning to evil, which you seem to prefer affliction. God is exalted in his power. Who is a teacher like him? Who has prescribed his ways for him, or said to him, you have done wrong? Remember to extol his work, which men have praised in song. All mankind has seen it. Men gaze on it from afar. How great is God beyond our understanding! The number of his years is past finding out. He draws up the drops of water, which distill as rain to the streams. The clouds pour down their moisture, and abundant showers fall on mankind. Who can understand how he spreads out the clouds, how he thunders from his pavilion, how he scatters his lightning about him, bathing the depths of the sea? This is the way he governs the nations and provides his food in abundance. He fills his hand with lightning and commands it to strike its mark. His thunder announces the coming storm. Even the cattle make known its approach. Chapter 37. At this my heart pounds and leaps from its place. Listen, listen to the roar of his voice, to the rumbling that comes from his mouth. He unleashes his lightning beneath the whole heaven and sends it to the ends of the earth. And after that comes the sound of his roar. He thunders with his majestic voice. When his voice resounds, he holds nothing back. God's voice thunders in marvelous ways. He does great things beyond our understanding. He says to the snow, fall on the earth, and to the rain shower, be a mighty downpour, so that all men he has made may know his work. He stops every man from his labor. The animals take cover. They remain in their dens. The tempest comes out from its chamber, the cold of from the driving winds. The breath of God produces ice, and the broad waters become frozen. He loads the clouds with moisture. He scatters his lightning through them. At his direction, they swirl around over the face of the whole earth to do whatever he commands them. He brings the clouds to punish men or to water his earth and show his love. Listen to this, Job. Stop and consider God's wonders. Do you know how God controls the clouds and makes his lightning flash? Do you know how the clouds hang poised, those wonders of him who is perfect in knowledge? You who swelter in your clothes when the land lies hushed under the south wind. Can you join him in spreading out the skies? Hard as a mirror of cast bronze? Tell us what we should say to him, and we cannot draw up our case because of our darkness. Should he be told that I want to speak? Would any man ask to be swallowed up? Now no one can look at the sun, bright as it is in the skies, after the wind has swept them clean. Out of the north he comes in golden splendor. God comes in awesome majesty. The Almighty is beyond our reach and exalted in power. In his justice and great righteousness he does not oppress. Therefore, men, revere him, for does he not have regard for all the wise in heart. So again, I'm back to the spot where I'm just kind of feeling like we're talking in circles here. Elihu gets worse in putting down Job. And what makes what makes me not like this section so much and kind of not like this guy at all is because he says a lot of things in this section that are true about God. But if you think about it, and these, I'm sure you know people that are the same way, that some of the people that are the worst, some people that are the worst liars, or at least maybe if they're not lying, they're the worst at deceiving people. They say things that are true, a lot of things that are true, because they need to establish that they, you know, I mean, essentially you got to get people to bite the hook on you, right? So you have to say some things that are true. And I think those are this, quite honestly, all of Job's three friends and Elihu here, they seem kind of like those people that are just dang near experts at that, saying enough true things to maybe even make you think you're wrong. But then they just keep feeding it with falsehoods and things that are not true. Again, he just continues to make the point here that Job is not listening. Job's getting what he deserves. But believe it or not, we only have 38, 39, 40, 41, 42, five more chapters. So we've gone through 37 chapters, and there's only five more in this book. So the ending comes quickly. We don't talk in circles forever, which I thank God for. So let's get to not talking in circles sooner rather than later. We'll do chapter 38. Then the Lord answered Job out of the storm. He said, "Who is this that darkens my counsel with words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Where were you when I laid the earth's foundation? Tell me if you understand. Who marked off its dimensions? Surely you know. Who stretched a measuring line across it? On what were its footings set? Or who laid its cornerstone, while all the morning stars sang together, and all the angels shouted for joy? Who shut up the sea behind doors when it burst forth from the womb? When I made the clouds its garment and wrapped it in a thick darkness? When I fixed limits for it and set its doors and bars in place? When I said, 'This far you may come and no farther. Here is where your proud waves halt.' Have you ever given orders into the morning, or shown the dawn its place, that it might take the earth by its edges and shake the wicked out of it? The earth takes shape like clay under a seal. Its features stand out like those of a garment. The wicked are denied their light, and their upraised arm is broken. Have you journeyed to the springs of the sea, or walked into the recesses of the deep? Have the gates of death been shown to you? Have you seen the gates of the shadow of death? Have you comprehended the vast expanses of the earth? Tell me, if you know all this. What is the way to the abode of light, and where does the darkness reside? Can you take them to their places? Do you know the path to their dwellings? Surely you know, for you were already born. You have lived so many years. Have you entered the storehouses of the snow, or seen the storehouses of the hail, for which I reserve for times of trouble, for days of war and battle? What is the way to the place where the lightning is dispersed, or the place where the east winds are scattered over the earth? Who cuts a channel for the torrents of rain, and a path for the thunderstorm, to water, a land where no man lives, a desert with no one in it, to satisfy a desolate wasteland, and make it sprout with grass? Does the rain have a father? Who fathers the drops of dew? From whose womb comes the ice? Who gives birth to the frost from the heavens? When the waters become hard as stone, when is the surface of the deep frozen? Can you bind the beautiful Pleiades? Can you loose the cords of Orion? Can you bring forth the constellations in their seasons, or lead out the bear with its cubs? Do you know the laws of the heavens? Can you set up God's dominion over the earth? Can you raise your voice to the clouds and cover yourself with a flood of water? Do you send the lightning bolts on their way? Do they report to you, 'Here we are'? Who endowed the heart with wisdom, or gave understanding to the mind? Who has the wisdom to count the clouds? Who can tip over the water jars of the heavens when the dust becomes hard and the clods of earth stick together? Do you hunt the prey for the lioness and to satisfy the hunger of the lions when they crouch in their dens or lie in wait in a thicket? Who provides food for the raven when its young cry out to God and wander about for lack of food? Chapter 39. Do you know when the mountain goats give birth? Do you watch when the doe bears her fawn? Do you count the moss till they bear? Do you know the time they give birth? They crouch down and bring forth their young. Their labor pains are ended. Their young thrive and grow strong in the wilds. They leave and do not return. Who let the wild donkey go free? Who untied his ropes? I gave him the wasteland as his home, the salt flats as his habitat. He laughs at the commotion of the town. He does not hear a driver shout. He ranges the hills for his pasture and searches for any green thing. Will the wild ox consent to serve you? Will he stay by your manger at night? Can you hold him to the furrow with a harness? Will he till the valleys behind you? Will you rely on him for his great strength? Will you leave your heavy work to him? Can you trust him to bring in your own grain and gather it to your threshing floor? The wings of the ostrich flap joyfully, but they cannot compare to the pinions and feathers of the stork. She lays her eggs on the ground and lets them warm in the sand, unmindful that a foot may crush them, that some wild animal may trample them. She treats her young harshly, as if they were not hers. She cares not that her labor was in vain. For God did not endow her with wisdom or give her a share of good sense. Yet when she spreads her feathers to run, she laughs at horse and rider. Do you give the horse its strength or clothe his neck with a flowing mane? Do you make him leap like a locust, striking terror with his proud snorting? He paws fiercely, rejoicing in his strength, and charges into the fray. He laughs at fear, afraid of nothing. He does not shy away from the sword. The quiver rattles against his side, along with the flashing spear and lance. In a frenzied excitement, he eats up the ground. He cannot stand still when the trumpet sounds. At the blast of the trumpet, he snorts, aha! He catches the scent of battle from afar, the shout of commanders and the battle cry. Does the hawk take flight by your wisdom and spread his wings toward the south? Does the eagle soar at your command and build his nest on high? He dwells on a cliff and stays there at night. A rocky crag is his stronghold. From there he seeks out his food. His eyes detect it from afar. His young ones feast on blood, and where the slain are, there he is. And so here we are, finally. God enters the chat, and he enters it forcefully and with authority. That is the key thing that I take away from this this section here in chapter 38 and 39. The first thing he says is, who is this that darkens my counsel with words without knowledge? And Job's three friends have all been speaking with and saying that they have the knowledge. God rebukes almost everything that has been said in these last few chapters, his speech makes it plain who he is, which is everything. I got to make sure I find it. In chapter 39, verses 9, will the wild ox consent to serve you? Will he stay by your manger at night? And if you ask me, that's a little bit of foreshadowing about Jesus, who is still quite a long ways into the future. But like I said, we've established that God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit, they are already in existence. They all three already are in the Bible and going through this early story of creation that we're in the middle of. And throughout this entire time, he also asks the question, and he says he answered Job. So he's talking to Job here. But he asks him, many, many times, was it you that did this? Was it you that made this? do you count the months until, does bear their fawns? Do you give the horse his strength, clothe his neck with a mane? Does the eagle soar at your command? So he's asking Job all these questions, and he does put Job in his place. We did establish a little bit that Job was a little bit entitled, a little bit arrogant, getting a little bit despairing, you know, which obviously it's hard not to in the situation that Job was in. But God reminds him of the truth, that he is in control, and he built this world, not you. And in one of the in chapter 38, verse 21, he says to Job, surely you know, for you were already born, you have lived so many years. Definitely sarcasm there, because he's telling Job, like, I hadn't made you yet, you weren't there, you and your earthly wisdom and all your years, well, you weren't here when I built the earth. So shut up. That's kind of what I take away from that. But God has entered the chat with authority, and we only have three chapters left. And we do find out in these chapters that Job's friends are listening to this entire conversation. They can hear God speaking. So we will close out the book of Job, which I am by this time, I'm ready to do. But now, due to these last chapters, I'm interested again. I'm ready to go. I'm excited to read these last three chapters. The Lord said to Job, will the one who contends with the Almighty correct him? Let him who accuses God answer him. Then Job answered the Lord, I am unworthy. How can I reply to you? I put my hand over my mouth. I spoke once, but I have no answer twice. I will say no more. Then the Lord spoke to Job out of the storm. Brace yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Would you discredit my justice? Would you condemn me to justify yourself? Do you have an arm like God's, and can your voice thunder like this? Then adorn yourself with glory and splendor, and clothe yourself in honor and majesty. Unleash the fury of your wrath. Look at every proud man and bring him low. Look at every proud man and humble him. Crush the wicked where they stand. Bury them all in the dust together. Shroud their faces in the grave. Then I myself will admit to you that your own right hand can save you. Look at the behemoth which I made along with you, which feeds on grass like an ox. What strength he has in his loins, what power in the muscles of his belly. His tail sways like a cedar. The sinews of his thighs are close-knit. His bones are tubes of bronze, his limbs like rods of iron. He ranks first among the works of God, yet his maker can approach him with his sword. The hills bring him their produce, and all the wild animals play nearby. Under the lotus plant he lies, hidden among the reeds in the marsh. The lotuses conceal him in their shadow. The poplars by the stream surround him. When the river rages, he is not alarmed. He is secure, though the Jordan should surge against his mouth. Can anyone capture him by the eyes or trap him and pierce his nose? Chapter 41. Can you pull in the Leviathan with a fish hook or tie down his tongue with a rope? Can you put a cord through his nose or pierce his jaw with a hook? Will he keep begging you for mercy? Will he speak to you with gentle words? Will he make an agreement with you for you to take him as your slave for life? Can you make a pet of him like your bird, or like a bird, or put him on a leash for your girls? Will traders barter for him? Will they divide him up among the merchants? Can you fill his hide with harpoons and his head with fishing spears? If you lay a hand on him, you will remember the struggle and never do it again. Any hope of subduing him is false. The mere sight of him is overpowering. No one is fierce enough to rouse him. Who then is able to stand against me? Who has a claim against me that I must pay? Everything under heaven belongs to me. I will not fail to speak of his limbs, his strength, and his graceful form. Who can strip off his outer coat? Who would approach him with a bridle? Who dares open the doors of his mouth, ringed about with his fearsome teeth? His back has rows of shields tightly sealed together. Each is so close to the next that no air can pass through. They are joined so fast together they cling together and cannot be parted. His snorting throws out the flashes of light. His eyes are like the rays of dawn. Firebrands stream from his mouth. Sparks of fire shoot out. Smoke pours from his nostrils as a boiling pot over a fire of reeds. His breath sets coals ablaze, and flames dart from his mouth. Strength resides in his neck. Dismay goes before him. The folds of his flesh are tightly joined. They are firm and immovable. His chest is hard as rock, hard as lower millstone. When he rises up, the mighty are terrified. They retreat before his thrashing. The sword that reaches him has no effect, nor does the spear or the dart or the javelin. Iron he treats like straw, and bronze like rotten wood. Arrows do not make him flee. Sling stones are like chaff to him. A club seems to him but a piece of straw. He laughs at the rattling of the lance. His undersides are jagged potsherds, leaving a trail in the mud like a threshing sludge. He makes the depths churn like a boiling cauldron and stirs up the sea like a pot of ointment. Behind him he leaves a glistening wake. One would think the deep had white hair. Nothing on earth is his equal, a creature without fear. He looks down on all that are haughty. He is king over all that are proud. Chapter 42. Then Job replied to the Lord, I know that you can do all things. No plan of yours can be thwarted. You asked, Who is this that obscures my counsel without knowledge? Surely I spoke of things I did not understand, things too wonderful for me to know. You said, Listen now, and I will speak. I will question you, and you shall answer me. My ears had heard of you, but now my eyes have seen you. Therefore I despise myself and repent in dust and ashes. After the Lord had said these things to Job, he said to Eliphaz the Temanite, I am angry with you and your two friends because you have not spoken of me what is right, as my servant Job has. So now take 7 bulls and 7 rams and go to my servant Job and sacrifice a burnt offering for yourselves. My servant Job will pray for you, and I will accept his prayer and not deal with you according to your folly. You have not spoken of me what is right, as my servant Job has. So Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite did what the Lord told them, and the Lord accepted Job's prayer. After Job had prayed for his friends, the Lord had made him prosperous again and gave him twice as much as he had before. All his brothers and sisters and everyone who had known him before came and ate with him in his house. They comforted him and consoled him over all the trouble the Lord had brought upon him, and each one gave him a piece of silver and a gold ring. The Lord blessed the latter part of Job's life more than the first. He had 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, 1,000 yoke of oxen, and 1,000 donkeys. And he also had 7 sons and 3 daughters. The first daughter he named Jemima, the second Keziah, and the third Keran-Hapuk. Nowhere in all the land were there found women as beautiful as Job's daughters, and their father granted them an inheritance along with their brothers. After this, Job lived 140 years. He saw his children and their children to the fourth generation, and so he died, old and full of years. And so ends the book of Job. Like I said, the beginning and the end of this book are some of my favorite parts of the Bible, but the middle of it, man, the middle can get monotonous and just talking in circles, which drives me bonkers. But it feels good. It feels good to have finished our very first book of the Bible and my takeaways from the end of it there. Job gets the conversation from God that he's been asking for this entire book, but then basically in that conversation, God gently rebukes him for being entitled and questioning him. And by the end of God's rebuke, Job says that he'll probably just keep his mouth shut, and he repents. He repents of being entitled and of the accusations that he threw at God's way. And then God turns to Job's three friends and rebukes them for being turds, because that's basically what they've been this entire book. And he makes them apologize and offer an offering for Job, or that they can offer, and Job will pray for them. And Job forgives them, which, you know, a heart that is full of resentment and anger usually does not forgive. So we can see a fairly quick turnaround. I think probably the second that God's voice came booming out of a storm, I think that's probably when Job got back to his old self real quick, being grounded in his faith and knowing that he had just messed up with his attitude. So, and it's kind of a weird way of also showing it as well. It talks about how God blessed him again and with his kids. Almost nowhere else in the Bible does it talk about someone's children, and it names the daughters but not the sons. That's a very rare instance. It also talks about how beautiful they were. So maybe, you know, just again talking about the blessings that God gave Job, but nowhere else does it mention the names of the daughters and not the sons. And then it also talks about them getting an inheritance from Job, which is also absolutely unheard of. That usually only went to the sons back in those days. So interesting little tidbit there. I hope you really enjoyed this episode. I hope that you are happy with the fact that we've gotten through an entire book of the Bible. I guess I haven't really encouraged anybody to read this through with us. But you know, if you feel so moved to read the sections as we go through them together, next week, we at the very first episode, we read Genesis 1 through 11, and we're going to read 12 through 21 next week, the books of Genesis, the chapters of Genesis 12 through 21. And I'm starting to really enjoy this podcast more than I was at the beginning. I was more nervous than anything, but starting to enjoy it. I'll keep getting better. And we finished our first book of the Bible, and that pumps me up quite a bit. So a couple more weeks, we'll be done with Genesis, moving on to Exodus, and we are trucking right along. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you next week.